Hello, and welcome to The Canadian Story, where we discuss what Canada is, what Canada could be, and what Canada should be. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Canadian Story. I'm pleased to have Dan Davies on the podcast today. He is a representative from Northern British Columbia, and I had the pleasure of helping him on his most recent campaign, getting to know his family, and just felt the love of small-town Canada while I was there, and just was impressed, massively impressed, with his deep, deep knowledge of not only the community's history, but the people in that community, and his wide network that he's developed there. So I wanted to have him on the podcast today to talk about being a representative for a rural community, his love for Northern British Columbia, and the future of our country. So welcome, Dan Davies. Why don't you share a little bit about what makes you you?
Well, thanks for having me on, David, and appreciate the opportunity. What makes me me? Wow, that's a great question. I am a small town guy. Yeah, you've been to Fort St. John. It's a small industrial town. In fact, we're called the Energetic City because we do house, much of the multiple industries that British Columbia has. What has driven me as an individual to be engaged in politics, engaged in my community, what was something my grandfather told me many years ago. And I was late teens, 18, 19. I remember complaining to my grandfather, and I'll tell you, if I could be half the man of my grandfather, I would be so happy, but because this, he was an incredible, incredible, gentleman. But, he told me one day when I was complaining about, the typical teenagers, it sucks here and there's nothing to do and da, da, da. And he looked and he goes, keep saying that. Of course it will. You're the one who's in charge of if your destiny is good, bad, or indifferent. If you keep saying it sucks here, then it is going to suck here. You will only get out of your community what you're willing to put into it. And that line has stuck with me forever.
I love that line. You will only get out of your community what you put into it.
100%. And I've really always taken that to heart. And it is, I've sat on multiple nonprofits. I've worked with youth groups in the community. I've been elected to city council here in Fort St. John. I ran for the conservative nomination. I ran for the BC Liberal nomination here provincially and got elected. And it's what drives me is that service to community. And, that's one of the things I also love about Canada is the ability for people in this country to be what you want.
Yeah.
And to do what you want. And I'm sure you've heard this, probably others on the show say that. We have unlimited opportunity here in Canada. And it is recognized. And I've traveled the world. I've been to countries across the world, Middle East. I've been in all across Europe, and people talk about Canada and how lucky we are. And I think we do take that for granted. I know it's kind of cliche. Oh, you take it for granted, but we do.
Yeah, we absolutely do.
Oh, we get tied up in social media and looking at all the negative and the negative and the negative. And I think we forget, man, that's just there's negative in everything. Let's look at the blessings we have. Let's look at the positivity around us because it's everywhere. It really is everywhere. And that's what I love about this country is that opportunity and to be what we want.
To get what we can out of what we give, right? I want to go a bit more into that because you've had such a life of giving. And one of the things that the listeners won't know, but that I got to experience was we were working on this campaign and we were doing what we do on campaigns, which is IDing voters. And all I had to do to get thousands of new IDs for Dan was go through his Facebook with him and talk about the people that you knew, all of these relationships that you've built and that has built such a rich life of community for you, which honestly, I admired it so much. And so I want you to talk about what is it that drives you to give so much, and what do you get out of giving? Because too often, it's what can we get from the world? What will the world give us? And you've lived your life on kind of the flip side of that, not what can I get, but what can I give? And look at much you've received from that. So tell us a little bit about that philosophy, because I think it's a bit more, it's definitely a bit more of a small-town philosophy, which is part of why I love rural Canada so much and these northern communities. But but I think it's something that needs to be shared with everyone.
Yeah. You know, the reward is, it's hard to describe that reward. It's in everything who I am. I walk around the community and I see things that are better in this community because of a board that I've sat on, and I'm not taking credit for this because I'm one person in a big clog of gears that make our community. And you're right. Small communities are different. I've lived in Vancouver and I've lived in Calgary. And the ability, I think, to engage on that really granular level of community engagement, is hard to do in larger centers than it is here. And when I sit on a board, whether, you know, the Restorative Justice Board, or I sit on the Legion, you know, I was the vice president of the Legion, you sit around and you look at a board of about 20 or so people, and you know, every single one of them around that board table are also sitting on five or six other boards in the community. And you get these incredible discussions around, you know, really the behind the scenes of what makes the community. It's these people.
Yeah, it's these people, volunteers, pretty much, right?
Well, you know, and that is it. I mean, I've always, volunteerism runs communities. And it is something that I don't think that we recognize enough. I know we have a National Volunteer Week and all that, but you know, our community is made up of and because of volunteers and people that engage and commit. And the reward is the friendships I've made. The reward is walking down the street and knowing every second person at least.
Yes.
The reward is looking at my two kids and knowing the community that they're growing up in and hopefully planning to stay and raise their own families in. That's the reward. I can't go any more than that. I mean, that is the reward itself.
So what do you think it is about people that makes them decide to take that step to give of themselves for community? Like what is it that creates this volunteerism that's so valuable to communities?
Well, I think it is something that you pass on as an adult to children. They see you engaged in stuff. I mean, I already know my daughter's volunteered lots, and you know, they see what you've done, and they see that they can be engaged in their community even at a young age, at 14. They can make an impact. And I've worked with the cadet program for many years. And I've always, because people ask, well, how do you know, even as the MLA, I've talked to groups of young people, and I've had school tours at the legislature, and they ask, how do you get involved in politics? It starts just getting involved in community.
Yeah.
It starts, get involved in the soccer club, not playing soccer, but get involved in the fundraising, get involved in the governance of it. And even at 14 years old, you can sit. Boards are dying to have young people.
Yeah,
I would be, and I've told this to you know, 14, 15 year olds. Go to a board, any board, doesn't matter the board in your community, the arts board, the stage group, whatever. They would say, "No, you're too young. We don't want you." It would be the exact opposite.
Yeah,
because we need to attract younger volunteers, because it is something I think that is starting to be less and less volunteerism. And I still sit on a few different boards, and there's a lot of people, well, you can't see my gray hair because I don't have any hair, but, you know,
yeah.
There's a lot of people that are really getting up there in age that are still running all of these organizations. We need to have in our communities these conversations about getting young people active, getting young people involved in volunteerism, because hey, quite frankly, we're not going to make it if we don't. Hey, just look at the last 18 months with COVID, or 16, I don't know, could be 2 years now. Yeah. It seems like forever with COVID, but,
yeah.
But look at the important, critical role that nonprofit groups have played during this pandemic.
Yeah.
The supports, the delivering food, the checking in on seniors to make sure that they're okay, you know, on and on and on. We have relied critically relied on nonprofit groups and volunteer groups. And you know, maybe that's the, one of the silver linings of COVID-19 is people have seen the value of volunteerism in these nonprofits.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what you were saying, like, people don't understand the joy that volunteering can bring, the communities that are created, the, like, it's, you know, there's that old line, it's better to give than to receive. And I think we so often forget that, and we're just consumed by our own small worlds and not giving, and we're keeping our world small. And I think, like you were saying with social media and all the negativity, if all we're doing is soaking in this negativity and not out there creating positivity, actually creating it, not just, you know, broadcasting it, we're never going to get out of this.
Yeah. And, you know, you said that line that we've all heard, it's better to give than receive. But, you know, when you do give, you do receive.
Yes.
You know, I mean, you receive more than you give if you volunteer and you contribute to your community. You know, all of my friendships are based in groups and people I interact with from volunteering. You know, that's my whole relationship is around that. And friendship is invaluable.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes. You can't put a price on it.
You can't put a price tag on it. And there's the receiving that, that I enjoy.
So you and I have talked about this a fair bit. I care about it a lot as someone who grew up in rural areas. You're representing a rural area. There's this divide that's happening in Canada between urban and rural. And now we're seeing a really troubling scenario in BC that I think you and I should discuss because it needs to be talked about. Moving away from even giving rural areas respect that they deserve. And so as a representative of a riding that's almost as big as the UK, you're now being asked to maybe even double the size of that riding. And I want you to share a little bit of, so people understand what it means to be a rural representative, but also why what's happening is anti-democratic.
Yeah. And you've been around government and politics long enough as well. And our job, my job as an elected official, and I think every Canadian's job is to make sure that at every opportunity we get, we improve our democracy, we improve our representation. That we need to make sure that we are always keeping the eye on that ball to improve representation and democracy in this country. And God knows it's been challenged a number of times over the past number of months. But it is really important, and we've seen this, and the rural-urban divide, it changes depending on where you are. There's always been the East versus West. I mean, we've seen that Alberta, Saskatchewan, feeling that they're not represented in the East. And it's hard to argue with that in many aspects. I live in the far northeast corner of British Columbia. And as you said, my riding is a little bit bigger than all of England and Wales combined. It's 160,000 square kilometers. And I, you know, if I were to travel to the far northeast corner, I mean, I've got a 10-hour drive ahead of me to the other side of my riding. And I talked to my colleagues in Vancouver. They have a 10-minute walk
across their riding.
Across their riding. And I'm not even saying that as a joke.
No.
It is a 10-minute walk when you look at their riding. And there is a difference, and I hate using, you know, this rural urban divide, because I don't want to be divisive.
No,
because I know that we need Vancouver or Victoria.
Yes.
I mean, it's part of our province. It plays an integral role with trade and commerce, but they also need us in rural BC, as you know. And my riding, I'm so blessed. We have forestry, we have oil and gas, we got mining, tourism plays an important role. We have the majority of the agriculture in British Columbia in the Northeast. Well, sorry, I shouldn't say agriculture, grains, wheat and canola. So I'm very blessed to have that, but so is British Columbia.
Right,
blessed
exactly.
Blessed to have that. And we got to stop talking about divisiveness and it needs to be more unity. We need to be looking at what is great about all of this. And just recently, what you were just kind of alluding to is a bill just passed. received royal assent yesterday. Bill 7, the Electoral Boundary Commission Amendment Act. And here in British Columbia, what it does is, first of all, the bill, the act initially had rural protection built into the act. So basically, doesn't matter what happens with the rest of the province, the large rural ridings will be protected because they are so diverse, so large, they need to be. They're unique. That has been removed under this new bill. And basically, it allows now when they redistribute and draw the lines to look more solely at population-based only. Well, my riding has got about 33,000 people in it. Most MLAs in the large urban centers represent 55,000 to 60,000. Just because, you know, I look at somebody who's downtown Vancouver, they don't have provincial roads in their riding. No. They don't have a provincial bridge. They don't deal with hunting issues, backcountry issues, snowmobiles. They're not dealing with forest fires, flooding, and the list goes on and on. That's all I deal with. And so, I mean, there are very unique differences to our larger rural ridings than our colleagues. And I'm not diminishing what my urban colleagues, they obviously have their own issues. But we are now looking at losing upwards of 7 of our northern and rural MLAs, and we will lose them, and they will be gained in these larger urban centers. So there's now been a even less representation of rural and northern BC in Victoria, because these have now been pushed into the Lower Mainland. Additionally, this legislation allows another 7, up to 7 additional MLAs to be brought into the legislature in Victoria. And of course, those are going to end up being in the large urban centers, you know, most predominantly in the Fraser Valley. Surrey is significant growth, Victoria. So where already we are grossly underrepresented, because, you know, we represent, as far as landmass, a handful of MLAs represent 90% of the province.
Yeah.
10%, 90% of the MLAs represent, you know, 10% of the province. And it's already challenging enough to try and convey in the BC legislature the importance of the oil and gas sector.
Yeah.
To Canada and British Columbia. And it's, you know, you've heard the arguments. You know, it's really hard to sell that often to our urban friends in Vancouver or downtown Victoria, that we will not get off fossil fuel in the next decade. That is a complete, you know, it's a faraway dream. Mm-hmm. But it's based in the real meaning of ignorance. It's an understanding that we need resources. We absolutely need resources. We need oil and gas for a long time yet, I'm afraid. We're not getting rid of my plastic iPad I'm talking on right now anytime soon.
No.
You know, or I'm still heating my house when it's minus 40 here. Yeah, exactly. In the winter with natural gas, thank God. So these are the voices that we need to make sure we have. If there's only 5 of us left in the legislature that represent resource ridings, we're going to be drowned out.
Yes.
We got to make sure that we still have that representation, just like the West needs to have representation in Ottawa. No different. Alberta needs a voice. Ottawa needs to understand the important key role that Alberta plays in our confederation. Like every other province.
Exactly. And I think it's interesting that a lot of the power, a lot of the products, the raw materials that run our civilization are all produced in these ridings, right? These are the ridings that are producing the building blocks that allow any of what we have now to be. Like if you're in Vancouver and it's really hot and you want air conditioning, that's being powered by energy, and that's almost assuredly being powered by some form of hydrocarbon, or the dam that nobody wants to be built, right?
Like, yeah, or the other 2 dams that are in my riding.
Yes.
That provide most of the electricity for the province.
Right, and all of this is happening outside of their daily lives, outside of their awareness. And it's like you said, because people will say, oh, well, don't we want every single person to have an equal voice in the legislature? Well, they don't. Because one of the things you've said to me, and I'd like you to share with us, like, if someone wants to come and see you about an issue, or if they, it's a lot different than if someone wants to walk 10 minutes down the street to their MLA's office in Vancouver. Right? And those people deserve a voice as well, and they deserve access to democracy. That's a something we're not, that people don't understand.
And that goes back to our opening comment. We must do everything that we can to not only preserve democracy that we have now, but we need to improve it. And this is going counter to that. And one of the examples we use, it's quite shocking when you think about it. For instance, our attorney general who introduced this bill, David Eby, he represents a riding, Point Grey, Vancouver. And my riding, if you took it, if it was enlarged to what it could be, to all the way to Mackenzie and pretty much the entire northeast corner of British, like it's just a 300,000, 260,000 square kilometers. It would be like asking someone in David Eby's riding who wants to meet with his MLA to come to Prince George.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'll meet with you. You got to drive to Prince George though. Well, you would have, are you out of your mind? Like yeah, nobody yeah. in Vancouver would do that, but it's expected for us. And you know, that's, people want access to their MLA. People want access to know that their concerns can be heard, their petition can be brought up in the legislature. They want to know that, you know, when they have a concern dealing with the provincial government, they have someone that they can go see and have advocate for them. And that's what's missing. And I know a lot of people say, oh, well, we can Zoom now. Two-thirds of my riding, there's no internet or cell service. So, again, it's an understanding that, of course, you know, you, anywhere in the Lower Mainland, you have access to cell, Wi-Fi, you name it, but not up here. Or in the winter, you can't travel down the highway many days of the year because it's a blizzard.
Exactly. So you hear the argument, well, they chose to live up there, so that's their problem. Why don't we talk a little bit about why people choose to live in these places? Because I think it's a misunderstood of the beauty of what that life can be. And what part of the Canadian story is, why do people decide to live in these places, right?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I decided to leave here because I was born here, first of all.
Right,
so
right.
It makes it a little bit easier. But I have no intentions on going anywhere because I can drive 10 minutes in any direction and be out in the middle of nowhere. About a 30-minute drive. I'm in the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. Streams. I like to fish. I can be on multiple streams fishing, lakes. I think it's the ability to be so easily accessing the outdoors is one of my reasons for living in rural BC. The other piece is I like to be able to drive to work in 5 minutes.
Yes. Yes. Exactly.
I remember when I was living in Vancouver, I was attending one class downtown Vancouver and I lived in Coquitlam. You know, I was an hour drive, all in the same city.
One way.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that hustle bustle piece, the access to the outdoors, the small town feel that I talked about earlier, you know people. This is still, you know, I think our small communities in across Canada are still entrenched in a lot of those great values that, you know, the community can raise a child. I know that my neighbor, if my kid does something stupid, I'm going to find out about it, or, you know, he's going to ream my kid out for doing something stupid. You know, that whole village to raise a child, it takes a village to raise a child, I think is much more prominent in our smaller communities. I know that my neighbors will watch my house if something suspicious happens. You know, they'll phone the police because they know that something's out of place. That is what's great about, I think, rural Canada. Not to downplay our you know, urban neighbors, but there's a difference. There is a difference, and we hear it when people come up here. I've talked to so many people, David, over my lifetime here that moved to Fort St. John on the 2-year, the 1-year program, and 25 years late. In fact, I just had lunch this afternoon. He was here he came up here for 3 months posting.
And he's been here for 25 years.
20 years now.
Yeah.
20 years now. Because opportunity is here. The people are here. He doesn't like traffic. So we don't have a lot of traffic here. So lots of great things. But I tell you, I also like visiting the city as well. I mean, the city offers lots of opportunities and great things too.
And a different sort of lifestyle.
Well, and a different lifestyle and, you know, opportunity. I mean, if you dive into what opportunity looks like, for instance, my wife came up here and, you know, she graduated with her degree and got hired almost immediately with a tenure at the local community college. That would take her 10, 15 years to get to that level if she stayed in the city where she's from Surrey. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And the opportunity, she started her own business up here, her own counseling business. You know, you just couldn't do that as easy in the city as you can here. I for instance, I talked my friend's a plumber in Vancouver, a Red Seal plumber. And, you know, he's always going looking for work and, you know, he makes a decent living. And I tell him, I said, come up here. Like, you can write your own paycheck.
Yeah.
I mean, you work as much as you want. And like I say, the opportunities are different and housing is much cheaper here than in Vancouver.
Yes.
But it's just, or Toronto, it doesn't matter where you look at it. The large centers are completely different than everywhere else. So it opportunities are just different. And I've talked to people that would never live. They prefer to live in the urban centers, which is fine as well. I mean, it's to each their own, but we all need each other. And we got to start focusing more on that unity piece than the divisive piece.
I completely agree. In terms of being a representative, we've had a few politicians on this podcast, but we really haven't talked about what it means to be a representative, what the day-to-day life is like, and why people make that sacrifice. You have to go all the way to Victoria multiple times a year. What's it like being a legislator? What do you enjoy about it? What are some of the challenges, and what are some things that maybe people just don't know about the job?
Well, you know what I really like about it is every day is different. Yeah. You know, it's not a job that, it's not that mundane job that you go and you push a button like Homer Simpson does. That's his job all day.
Yep.
every day is different. Every day is unique. Every day comes with a new challenge, a new problem. You know, of course, when the legislature is sitting, you've got to always have these two hats on. You're dealing with what's happening in the House, bills. You're writing speeches, you're debating, you're preparing, you're being lobbied, you're meeting with different user group or groups around the province. But you also, at the same time, you have everything going on in your riding, your own constituency. And every elected official in this country, an MLA, an MPP, an MP, your number one role is to your constituents. And I think we often forget a lot about that. That's my role. That's who elected me. Is the Peace River people. That is my responsibility and my duty first and foremost. So when the House is in session, it's a real balancing act, and you got to have good staff in your office because they're running a lot of the stuff. So there's and of course every issue that comes through the door is different that you're dealing with also at home. So I love that part. I love the advocacy piece. I love when someone comes with you with a problem that they just, you know, they've gone to everywhere and they just can't get it resolved. And they call you, you know, after you've done this, that with the minister and talked, and they call you and said, hey, I got my problem solved. That's the most rewarding thing. When you see someone who was desperate to have some sort of resolve on a problem and you've got them over that finish line. That's great. I really, really enjoy that. The challenge, obviously, I mean, I've got a fairly young family, you know, traveling to Victoria, traveling to Vancouver for, you know, stakeholder meetings. I am on the road lots. I'm on the road lots in my own riding.
Yeah.
Locally, you know, locally, I'm on the road a lot. Like I go up to Fort Nelson. It's 4.5 hours away on a nice summer day. You know, I have an office up there. So I'm even away when I'm local. I try and, of course, include my family as much as I can. You know, if there's, of course, everybody wants your elected representative at multiple events, and you try and balance those as best you can. And I love those. I mean, you know, that's great when you get out there and interact, you know, with individuals, whether you're at opening the local farmers market or a park or, you know, attending a powwow, doesn't matter. You're really at that granular level again of interacting with your constituents, and really they come up and talk to you, like, and that's one thing. If I could get out, I mean, talk to your politicians. People are afraid to. Right. Honestly, I mean, people like, oh, geez, I can't talk to the MLA or I can't talk to my MP. No, you can. In fact, that is one of your fundamental pieces of that relationship between your elected representative is the ability, if you see them in the mall, go up and say hi to them and such. So often it's that is when I hear really what's going on in my community is when you're out attending these different functions and talking to people. And, you know, that's when you hear, if you're doing a good job.
Yeah. Or a bad job.
Or a bad job.
You'll hear both.
Well, I'll tell you, they usually don't come up and pat you on the back and saying you're doing awesome. It's unfortunately, people automatically go to the, what the hell are you doing with this? And, you know, the finger poke in the chest, right? So it's, that's one of the challenges. And sometimes, to let the listeners know, I'm in opposition. So, you know, I of course, we are limited and our hands, you know, we have one hand tied behind our back. My analogy is I feel like that baby that's strapped into the height chair in the kitchen and mom's walking around the kitchen and the baby's crying and screaming and wants food, but mom just keeps going about doing her thing.
Does whatever she's doing. Yeah. Opposition is a very different role than government for sure. And you've seen that, but what do you think it is about opposition that's important, right? What is your role now? Like, how would you explain it to people?
Well, you know what? It is an extremely important role. The opposition parties, doesn't matter what province or federally, play a key role in elevating issues to the public eye. You know, most stories that you see written across the country, doesn't matter in a newspaper or on television, that are critical of the government, is on television or in the newspaper because opposition made it get there almost always.
Yes.
Sometimes media, you know, they've done their own digging, but for the most part, your opposition parties are the ones that are hammering the government in question period and bringing that stuff up into the public eye. And then that gets the media saying, oh, geez, look at that. Like, we just look at the cruise industry here in British Columbia. You know, the nobody even thought it was an issue when, you know, Congress introduced a bill in the United States to repeal the Jones Act, which basically it's an old piece of legislation that's been in place that mandates American cruise ships that they must stop in Canada. They can't sail by when they go to Alaska. They have to stop in Canada, do a port of call in Victoria or Prince Rupert or Vancouver. Well, that bill was introduced. We told government, you better be advocating for this. You better be talking to the Americans. You better be talking to the federal government to get, oh, you guys are politicizing this. You're just fear-mongering.
Right,
you're fear-mongering.
Right.
It's never going to happen, is exactly what the premier said. Well, this bill was introduced and in record time got unanimous consent of both the House of Representatives and the Senate. And it was passed and signed by President Biden a week later. It was like, really, we're fear-mongering, are we?
Yeah,
and,
it's,
you know,
done.
So now the media's on it, and now everything. And, of course, opposition brings these up. And, you know, that's our critical role is to make sure people understand that, you know, not everything government does is good.
Yeah, it's holding the government to account, right?
It is publicly holding the government to account. It's publicly, you know, diving into legislation and saying, you know, this is good in Vancouver, but it's not good in Fort St. John or Prince George or Prince Rupert. And that's our job as opposition MLAs representing our different ridings across this province. And again, it's the same in every other province. It's a critical role that that opposition plays.
Absolutely. What's your... as a representative, and when you kind of think about democracy in general, what are some of your concerns? What are some of the things you think are robust? Like, what do you think of the state of democracy right now? And what can we do to improve democracy?
How much time do we have?
At least another 10 minutes.
Okay. You know, Canada, I mean, let's be honest. Canada still has a pretty decent democracy when we look around the world. You know, I still consider myself very lucky. I believe in our parliamentary system. I believe in our constitutional monarchy that we are part of. And I appreciate, you know, it has changed over time. Is it the best? Obviously, it's not. But you know what? It's pretty darn good when we look around the world at what's out there. We as citizens of this country, we as elected officials, as I said earlier on in this podcast, was we need to at every stage to be making sure that we are improving, building, protecting what we have as far as our democracy goes and our democratic rights. And we've really seen it being challenged in many ways over the past decade. You know, really there's, you know, how dialogue is gone, and you know, where does your rights as an individual supersede someone else's rights as an individual? Where does, you know, why can't I have an opinion versus, you know, that now you're infringing on my freedom of speech that we have? Why can't I have an opinion? Why is the default automatically XYZ because you said something? You know, granted, there's hate speech is one thing, but I still think every Canadian needs to have opinions, because when we lose that dialogue and that discourse, I think, between different opinions, you know, we become the, you know, Star Trek term here, we become the Borg, you know. Yeah. One thing is good for everything. Resistance is futile. We don't want that.
No,
we need to be challenging ideas. We need to be challenging other people on their direction that they might want to go. And again, going back to, I think this is where opposition needs to start playing roles, is challenging, you know, federally. We need to start challenging what the Prime Minister is saying. We need to. We need to start challenging the narrative that a lot of the mainstream media is pushing out there. And I think that is one thing that kind of worries me right now. And we've seen mainstream media really take a change in direction on opinion, which again, I think is something at risk, and the role that social media plays in our across our country, across all age groups, the strength of social media and, you know, whether you want to call it cancel culture or whatever, it exists. You can't be that because XYZ, and we're gonna, you know, and on social media, it only takes the right tweet or the right post, and it's gone viral, and you're done. So that's what worries me right now. And we need to be working as legislators. We need to be working as people in this country across the board to protect opinion, that discourse, protect that discourse.
How do you think we can do that? How do we fight the war?
Well, you know, this discussion here, even, you know, we need to be talking about it. We need to have those, you know, discussions around a fire pit with your friends. You need to have that discussion, share stuff on social media that might be, you know, counter to what other people are saying, and have the conversation. You know, I think elected officials obviously play a big role in making sure that, and we have seen it in many cases where you see some politicians, you know, standing up and saying, that's not right. You know, that is not right. My opinion is valid, especially in this place, in a provincial legislature or in the House of Commons. This is where we need to have that. And I think politicians need to be really exercising and pushing that angle all the time.
Yeah, I love what you say. We need to have the conversation. And I think part of that is having a conversation with people that disagree with us as well, right? And like you said, why do we want to be all the same? Why have we got to this point where it's this dogma, and if you don't agree with this dogma, then you're not, you're subhuman almost, right? And it's from both sides to a degree, right? There's a there's an element on the right that is very doesn't even want to hear anything that comes from the left. It's become this adversarial politics, which you know, we're watching happen, and I don't think people like either yourself or me are really interested in the adversarial kind of politics. We're interested in the advocacy side of politics. So
yeah,
maybe you can share.
So you're bang on, David. You know, it's everything is divisive now. And I don't want to point anything at the former President Trump, but you know, we saw that as the mecca of divisive politics. It didn't matter, the Democrats and the Republicans. They were both just as bad. It was sour. It was foul. It wasn't good for anybody what you happened there. I mean, and to make matters worse, it doesn't matter what country you turn on the Canadian news. That
and we're
was
all talking about
story.
That. I know we're not talking about Canada. We're talking about Trump.
And it was awful. Like, why do I turn on my global news or CTV news every single night? And that's the leading story about Trump or this or that. It's just like, and it feeds into that fire. It feeds into that frenzy. And, you know, I really, and this is why I love my local media, because they don't dive into that.
No,
they dive into meaningful stories to my community, my region, my province. And you know, the big mainstream media, I think really lost their mark over the past 4 years, and it turned up, quite frankly, I think it turned a lot of people off. You know, the CBCs, the CTVs, the Global, people just tuned it out. I've had the, and I'm sure you have too, I've had the conversation with so many people that say, I don't even watch news anymore.
Yeah.
Don't even watch it. It's just awful. Well, it's because they made it off of themselves, the media.
Well, I think
it's a shame.
Instant gratification thing from media's perspective, right? They're like, oh, if we talk about this, our ratings go up, more people watch us, there's controversy. But the thing is, they don't understand that when finally people stop listening to them and they stop having, let's say, Trump as president or COVID to talk about, they're not going to have anything to talk about, and they're going to have lost their credibility in the process.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I watched the news a couple days ago, and it was funny. The leading story was something about ravens and crows. I was like, that's the opening story now? Oh, yeah, I guess COVID's disappearing and there's no Trump or whatever to talk about. So they're talking about ravens and crows.
Well,
maybe that's good, though. Maybe that's good.
Maybe. I mean, I think we are seeing the death of the mainstream media. I mean, it's just people don't get their information from singular sources anymore. They get it from their networks, right? And
You know, and you bring up a really interesting point, and I know you might have even had one on your show once, Ellis Ross.
Yes, I did.
You know,
yeah.
Much respect for Ellis. He's an amazing, amazing colleague, and he interviewed some young people in Vancouver. This wasn't so long ago, actually. He sat down with, you know, 15 young people. When I say young people, 17, you know, so that age, and he asked them where do you get your news from? TikTok. Like,
oh,
honest. And it's like, what news? What's on TikTok that you can get news? It's memes,
right?
That's all that's it. A good meme. That's it for media. So, you know, we've gone from this to that, and
right.
I worry about both now.
Yeah.
You know, it's scary where people get their information from. And, you know, I'll tell you, misinformation is the killer right now. And if there's anything we've seen in the last 16 months, it's, you know, it doesn't matter if you turn on the TV or, you know, your social media channel, whatever that platform you use, it's misinformation or even government is just as guilty of giving, you know, it's this one day.
I know. And
so maybe they're breeding it themselves.
And speaking of democracy, that so degrades democracy, right? When a government cannot be consistent, when it's saying one thing one day, or let's say the leaders are doing the opposite of what they're telling everyone else to do. This is the great problem, I think, with where we're headed is we have these leaders who are unable to give us the truth, honest, clear. This is, and with humility, right? And say, you know what? Yeah. Say what they don't know, right? I think if people would just be willing to do that, if people were more to have the volunteer mindset towards leadership, the servant idea towards leadership, where they want to make their community better, and it's not about winning and it's not about power, it's about representation, like you said. I think, honestly, if more people had the attitude that you have towards being a representative, we'd be better off. And I think that's what I would encourage everyone who listens to this podcast to think about, is what kind of leader do you want to be? Do you want to be the kind of leader who walks down the street and knows every other person because they've dug into their community and invested because they got back from their community what they gave to it? Or do you want to be the kind of person who's yelling at other people and a rage machine, right?
You know, and it's interesting. And that's, I honestly do believe, and I hope I'm right. Politicians, even on all political spectrums, you know, they do get up in the morning. I hope politicians, some of them don't get up in the morning. How can I screw the country over today? I hope that's not,
no,
you know,
no. Yeah, yeah.
Not their morning. their morning affirmations is how to screw over Canadians. I don't think that's it.
No.
But, so I think though, politics and one thing in politics is, it's a machine. Mm-hmm. It's a huge, and you've been around it. I mean, it is a machine that you can sometimes just get swallowed up in and lose sight of why you're there. Mm-hmm. And you get into the partisan politics, you get into that rush of survival and, you know, my role as a legislator, and you lose touch of why you're there. You know, you lose touch of that passion to help people, that passion that people put trust in you. They marked an X by your name to represent them and because they believe in you. And that's what is my grounder, is to keep thinking back to that. And I know that even sometimes I get hung up in the political machine and I got to take a step back and like, oh, you know, I'm going down that path. And I do think everybody gets into politics with the best of intentions. And honestly, you know, we have an NDP government here. Is everything they've done bad? No. Yeah. Has everything Trudeau done bad? No. Mm-hmm. But we at the end of the day need to look at, first of all, we're all humans. We all got into our respective positions with good intentions. And I think if we can start the dialogue there, maybe things will be a little more respectful.
Yeah.
Maybe. I hope.
I think it would be.
I hope so.
Well, I really, really appreciate who you are, what you do for your country, what you do for your province, and for coming on my podcast. I'm just very grateful. So thank you for everything that you do.
Well, I really appreciate having me on the show here today. And like you say, it's good just to chat, catch up. It's good to talk. And, you know, your podcast, even just talking about why we're proud to be Canadian.
Yeah.
Those are conversations that we all need to be having more on Facebook, Instagram, more on Twitter, more when you're sitting around a campfire. Because right now you sit around a campfire, you complain and you talk politics and how bad things are.
Right.
You know, that should be 10% of the conversation. We need to talk 90% about why it's awesome to be Canadian. And my hat's off to you on this podcast to talk about the many good things it is about being Canadian. So thanks for that.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on. And I know Zach is appreciative too. He was very quiet today, but
and I've listened to your podcast. Zach usually throws in the odd question or two.
I'm just sitting here learning. sometimes it's the right time to speak and sometimes it's the right time to listen.
There you go. Well,
they say that's why we have two ears and one mouth, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Got to listen more than we do talk. All right, gentlemen.
Thank you so much.
It's an absolute pleasure.
Have a good day. Thank you for listening to The Canadian Story. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at The CAD Story. That's The CAD Story. If you enjoy this podcast, please share it with your friends and family. Let's work together to remind Canadians how great their country is.